Hello, everybody, and welcome to week four of the Survivor Know-It-Alls, breaking down everything Survivor New Zealand. It's been a big week on the show, and we've got we need a big person to tackle that. So I thought we would bring in one of the premier experts on Survivor, one of the goofiest guys going around, and just a downright awesome bloke to talk to. Please welcome Mike Bloom.
Thank you, Pico. Or are you Gaio? I'm not entirely sure at this point. We need to figure that out over the course of the podcast.
Okay, cool. Let's make that our, like, that's our mission. That's our mission. What are the qualities? What do you need to be Gaio? And what do you need to be, was it Pinto? Pico?
Pinto, yeah. So Gaio Pinto, this caused a little bit of confusion on my part because, you know, I took rudimentary Spanish, but I took like 8 years of Spanish growing up. And I was a little confused because Pinto does mean bean in Spanish, but Gaio does not mean rice. Arroz means rice. Gaio means rooster. And actually, Gaio Pinto is a Spanish dish that has rice and beans in it. But it's called Gaio Pinto because it means like speckled chicken. And the rice with the beans mixed in kind of looks like a speckled chicken, I suppose. So it's a little bit of like three steps of mistranslations ends up with this version, I guess, the New Zealand Survivor's version of rice and beans, which we saw the initial incarnation in Survivor Heroes versus Villains. I don't know how Jack and Tom compare to Courtney and Sandra. A bit paltry, but that's no knock against them.
Look, I'm honored to be your speckled chicken, Mike. I'm honored.
Well, I guess the question is, you know, Gaio, I guess, since it's a rooster, we have to figure out which one of us is the more cocky one. But I feel like you and I are so self-deprecating between the two of us that it's really a game of inches or centimeters. In your regard.
Centimeters. We're just going to be just paying each other out, but at the same time, before we went online, I was telling Mike all these phrases in Australian slang that won't translate, and I think paying someone out is one of them. Is that right?
No, I mean, there are careers that definitely pay out in a different regard, but I feel like I'm thinking of it differently from what you're trying to allude to here.
Okay, paying someone out is like insulting them, so... Your education in Australian slang begins now. So welcome,
wow.
Mike. Thank you so much.
Even when you are not in the classroom, you are still teaching me. I'm so appreciative of that.
It's in my blood, man. It's in my blood. Welcome. Thank you so much. How you been enjoying New Zealand Survivor? Give me just your big picture overall. What are your thoughts?
So I'm going to temper this initially by sort of putting out a disclaimer. I'm going to be a little constructive about it. We're in week four. We've seen 8 episodes of the show so far. We're going into the merge. I feel like you and I have enough opinions to glean so far to really give an accurate statement of our thoughts on the season so far. What I will give a disclaimer about to the New Zealand Survivor community at this point is I think we need to give them a little bit of slack because, Definitely. Yes, Survivor has been on the air in some way, shape or form for 17 years at this point come this summer. But this is the initial incarnation of Survivor New Zealand. So while, yes, there are other versions for them to rely on, I mean, it seems like they're exclusively using challenges that have been used in other versions, albeit a little watered down. It seems like the budget's a little smaller and it's really, you know, them starting from a base, almost like building a fire. You need to get some kindling built before you actually spark the flame. And so I feel like, you know, we need to give them a little bit of slack in that regard. That being said, it's actually really interesting comparing this to the season of American Survivor that just wrapped, Survivor Game Changers. They're almost a little bit of yin and yang in that I think some of the quibbles that people have had with Game Changers this season, which was erratic storytelling and too many advantages / twists, Survivor New Zealand almost solves those problems. You could say those are the big strengths of Survivor New Zealand. At the same time, I think some of the things that Survivor Game Changers had in the positives column in terms of, you know, really high stakes, intense gameplay and big TV moments, Survivor New Zealand isn't necessarily living up to at this moment. So it's really interesting sort of seeing these two seasons side by side and that they're really able to fill in the gaps. I want to ask you, now that, again, we are 8 episodes in, how do you feel about this decision to do not necessarily 2 episodes a week, because we had Australian Survivor had 3 episodes a week, but 2 episodes covering 1 3-day cycle? Does that stretch things out too much for your liking?
Look, I think it does. Like, I think I agree with your point. I think Survivor New Zealand has been really good for the first incarnation. I feel like there are people out there who are willing to play which is great. I just feel that we need to kind of like give it a bit of a bit of slack. I, for one, have loved poking fun at the, you know, the budget nature of the show, but that's because it's a little bit of tongue in cheek, a bit of fun. I do think that these people did come there to play, and I am really been appreciating seeing that happen. I definitely am invested in the characters, as you had said before, but I think the 2 episodes a week does drag it out. Now, I'm okay with getting 2 episodes a week, but it's the time period, like you said. If it was 2 episodes across 5 days, 6 days, or something like that, I could set my watch to that. You know, we get a lot of people saying about American Survivor that, you know, oh, I wish we could kind of go back to that idea of, you know, more camp life and more personal stories. This is what Survivor New Zealand is, and many people are saying that it drags. So I don't know. I like getting a little bit of that. I definitely feel that was completely lacking in Game Changers. Like the fact that, you know, we didn't know anything about Sarah, the fact that she had just had a baby. You know, the only stuff we really got at like camp was about, you know, 2 or 3 episodes in a row of them saying how hard the game was and them crying about it. I feel like there was a balance between the two. So New Zealand's gone is too far one way. Maybe American Survivor's going too far the other. We need that middle ground. And I'm not suggesting that Australian Survivor is the middle ground, because there was plenty of things that went wrong with that. But there definitely needs to be a balance, because we don't need to. Mike, what do you think about when we go to an immunity challenge and then we go back to the winning tribe and we get their thoughts on what's going to happen? Like, do we need that?
It's a good question. I mean, I do agree with what you said. I think we need a neutral box for a Survivor, essentially. I know that's like a trigger word for you at this point. But I feel like it's totally a Goldilocks method, like you said, where I feel like some, especially this season of American Survivor, which, I mean, aside from the truncated storylines, also was aired only in 12 weeks rather than the initial 14. And then you have this season where we drag things out. And it's also interesting in that I do feel like the gameplay itself is revving up a little bit post-Switch, because we have different amalgamations of people. But at the same time, what were the major storylines coming into this episode? Oh, Shannon's on the bottom of Hermosa. Shay's on the bottom of Mogoton. And that's sort of where it was throughout the course of the 2 episodes. It does feel like we sort of were going back to the well one too many times. I think that was especially prevalent in these early episodes, when it's a downside with Hermosa or with a tribe that wins constantly in the beginning. Sometimes, you know, if they're not going to tribal council, sometimes the same stories repeat themselves. And I felt like every time we went back to Hermosa, it was always about Nate and Barbara on the bottom. Nate and Barbara on the bottom. They reach out to Shannon, but they're still on the bottom. So I'm happy that we had the Switch to at least change things up, even though it ended up screwing over people like Georgia and Shay as a result. And now that the merge is coming up, that's going to make things exciting, and I'm sure we're going to break down all the possible dynamics going into it. It's also an interesting choice in that, you know, we have 2.5 hours of Survivor to stretch over the course of these 2 episodes. It's interesting to me, and I'm assuming that this is just a choice from a TV perspective. You know, the Sunday night episode is probably, from a time slot perspective, less competitive than a Monday night time slot. So that's why they choose to make the Sunday episode an hour and a half as opposed to the Monday episode. But I feel like, do we need an hour and a half episode covering a reward challenge at a Redemption Island duel? Yeah. I feel like the chalk of the exciting stuff that comes out of Survivor sometimes is in the leading up to immunity challenge, post-immunity challenge, tribal council. And even if there's something that you want to, you know, bring out of order that has a lot of prominence in the latter half of the episode, put it in the latter episode. I think that's totally fine, as long as the timing's not entirely off. So you have to wonder, again, their hands might be tied from a programming perspective, but why they decided, okay, this first episode, which really, you know, I'm glad that at least we end on somebody getting eliminated from the game. It's not necessarily a non-elimination. At least we end with somebody leaving the game in some way, shape, or form with Redemption Island. But you have to wonder, if they had their druthers, would they rather dedicate more time to the exciting action, presumably, that would happen after the immunity challenge?
It's kind of weird, because when it's like, all right, and Izzy's going home, she was she lost the jewel, she goes home, it's like, oh yeah, Izzy's still in the game. Like, it's almost like that happened last week. Like, to me, it's a little bit strange that it's a bit disjointed. But going back to what you said about the scheduling, in Australia, Sunday night TV is like the night. And I remember when our season of Australian Survivor was airing, you know, the decision to kind of air on Sunday night was a really big one, because that's like, you know, premiere slot time, and that is really, really hard fought for ground. And I would assume that, you know, Australian TV tastes and New Zealand TV tastes being quite similar, that that's the same thing in New Zealand. So I think that the length of the episode on the Sunday is because they really want to kind of like drag out the ratings, because, you know, from what I've gathered, New Zealand Survivor's rating quite well. So yeah, I think they're trying to capitalize on the, you know, those key points in the time slot. But yeah, it definitely is a lot. It's a lot, but you know, there's plenty of good stuff. So let's get stuck in and talk about some of them. What were the main things that popped out to you? Because, you know, we've talked about this whole idea of Georgia and Shannon on the bottom. Shannon on the bottom. What else do you think was the key points in the episode? What's one of the major stories that you were tracking?
I mean, I think another big player, because I agree those two were definitely at the forefront. I feel like we need to start turning towards Tom as well, the requisite teacher that seems to exist in these international versions nowadays. Because, yeah, Tom definitely had a tumultuous initial stage of the game in that he apparently was caught, you know, bonding with some of those younger guys that ended up on the other tribe. As a result, he was sort of on the outs. But through the grace of Avi and Avi alone, he was able to survive until the swap. Now he's sort of in Valhalla, basically, you know, surrounded by these young guys that he bonded with at the beginning, and it seems like he's in for a type four. And so now the big question is, you know, is he going, now that the merge is in sight, is he going to forsake Avi and the Mogatons that he bonded with earlier in order to join up with these guys? Signs point to yes, but it seems like Tom has also been able to, I don't know, going into this, I mean, obviously the three guys had the numbers, Mike, Lee, and Jack. But Tom has this really interesting maneuver at the end of the episode where he says, okay, here, I'm going to pitch giving you a throwaway vote, and talks about this idea of Redemption Island, which I'll admit I'm never a huge fan of Redemption Island on these shows, even though it can produce big TV moments like we saw throughout the entirety of Blood versus Water. I feel like there's something inherently wrong about this idea that, you know, once someone gets voted out of the game, they are still able to win their way back. I know that Izzy and Georgia are going to talk up its merits early on in the first episode about how, you know, at least if I'm eliminated, it's by my own volition and not because someone stabbed me in the back. But I don't know, the purist in me finds something strange about it. But it does allow for these interesting strategies to emerge, like Tom saying, you know, trying to, almost like what happened with the Savaiis in South Pacific, trying to put on an acting job by saying, look, I'm playing two sides. Let me, you know, throw out a line, say that I voted for Mike and feel betrayed that Shave left, so that if she ends up coming back to the game, she won't immediately suspect me as a rat. Therefore, I could be a spy. And one of the other interesting dynamics is Shannon's integration into Hermosa, at least from what it seems, and the fact that come merge, we could see spy versus spy here, a la Mad Magazine, of Shannon spying on behalf of her tribe's alliance versus Tom spying on behalf of the boys. And the question is, you know, there's a swing contingency in the middle, I think, come merge. Where are they going to go? That's going to dictate how the rest of the game goes.
Spies are us. I like
it. Yes, exactly.
I think that the Tom thing was really interesting because, for my money, I thought it was terrible. Like, I understand what he's trying to do and he's thinking far ahead. But look, it's pretty sketchy to throw, first of all, to throw, I'm going to vote for you, or like, how about I vote for you? That is not, like, unless that person is a Christina Char, you really don't want to be throwing that out there. But Mike is a Christina Char, it seems. Like, he went along with it. Sierra in Cambodia would never have gone for that. Like, you can't, you do not want, especially with those five people, Mike observed, it just takes one person. And the thing is that, like, earlier on, we got the scene between Tom and Jack being so close, the Gaio Pinto thing. I don't know. I don't know if I was Mike, if I'd be comfortable with that. I don't know if the juice is worth the squeeze, because we saw in her final words when she was voted off, Shay said, she's like, if I get back into the game, no one on Mogaton is, you know, I'm coming for all of them. So it didn't even work. It didn't even work. He exposed himself. He puts himself in this really tricky position where it seems like, you know, he seems like he's getting the ability to go over and talk to the other tribe come merge time. But I don't know. Do you want that? I don't know. I didn't like it.
And it's tough because even in the first episode, you get this weird moment where Avi wins this big hero challenge, which I'm sure we'll talk about, big redemption for him. And they go to Tom, Matt goes to Tom and says, you know, what do you think about this? And Tom is like, you know, I'm happy for Avi today. It's almost, that's like a nice microcosm of him really trying to woo both camps. And you have to wonder if that statement stuck well with his guys when he came back to camp, of like, why were you cheering Avi on? But I guess he's still trying to, again, keep up the guys that he's appeasing Avi, because you'd have to imagine that even from Shay's perspective, Shay has been playing a little erratically this season, but she's not dull. She knows immediately how much Tom was broing down with these guys, and you'd have to assume, I think that as much as people might complain that like these people are not necessarily the most exciting people on television, which I will totally agree with, but that doesn't matter to me. I like seeing regular people on my TV screen as well.
That's true.
And these people, even people like Nate and Jack, who seem like a little more over the top, they still seem relatively normal. Someone you might bump into at a bank, for example.
Yeah,
Jack even works at a bank.
There's no coach. There's no, Philip. There's none of that. And that's probably a good thing. That's a good thing. Yeah. I like the characters. Like you said, I find them relatable. Yes, a little bit kind of mellow in the confessionals. Like Tom, for example, earlier on, people were comparing myself to Tom. I don't know if it's because a teacher with, dark hair or something like that. But he definitely has a very slow demeanor when the confessionals. But I thought the funniest thing he said was like, it's about boys going on a camping trip and that one of them's brought their angry missus along.
There's really fun moments. And like, I loved Nate's random moment where he's complaining about Shannon giggling all the time, like she's on a bus school trip or something.
Hey, the retirement village people, they need their rest.
Yeah,
they can't have people giggling.
I hope they continue with that alliance name as well.
Because
I feel like we have sort of three contingencies going into the merge here. We have the retirement village people, which seem to be Barb, Nate, and I think Sala has ended up joining them as well. I think he's really gotten under their wings. Then we have, for all intents and purposes, let's call it the New Zealand Four Horsemen, the Kiwi Four Horsemen.
That's exactly what I was going to say, Mike.
We have Mike, Lee, Jack, and Tom. And then in the middle, we have Avi, we have Shannon. Those two seem to be, two that people that could really flip anywhere they want to. And then we also have this additional factor of someone coming back from Redemption Island, who is basically going to be a number for one of the guaranteed sides, no matter who comes back.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. And I think that you are astute in pointing that out, because we got a confessional from Avi saying that he really likes Shannon and he's really kind of like getting close to her. They very, very much could be in the middle with the Four Horsemen through Tom trying to pull over Avi and the guys trying to pull back over Shannon. But I just can't see Avi turning on the retirement village people. Can you? Mm. I think he's just too nice. He's too nice. It's a little bit sickening when he's like, I don't know if he doesn't have that cutthroat demeanor for the game. And not saying that you need to have that, but, he says like, he's talking about, quality time and friends, and they play that like jaunty resort music in the background when he's in the hammock. And I just don't know if he's going to, be that fulcrum that we want in the middle, that person who, like the Sarah, Sarah Lucina in the middle saying like, I decide, I'm the president, I can go where I want. Mm. It's going to be much more of like this kind of like conflict of friendship between, do I betray Sala? Do I betray Tom? And that can, that can deliver good stuff as well. But I think he's definitely, he's definitely not getting any villain awards anytime soon, that's for sure.
Well, what I will say about that is, first of all, I love Avi. Maybe this is my like blunt sense of American talking, but he reminds me so much of Jemaine Clement of Flight of the Conchords fame. Maybe it's just because he's one of the only New Zealanders I know, but maybe it's because it's like his look. I don't know. There's just something about him that reminds me. Maybe he's a little demure like you were talking about before, but Avi definitely also seems like the good-hearted guy who will not cross someone unless they cross him first. And we also have, I completely forgot that one of the big stories we need to mention is Mogaton throwing that challenge.
Oh, we'll get to that, Mike. We'll get to that.
And the fact that not only did they do that, but it was so noticeable by the guys on Hermosa that I think Sala and Avi are a little less trusting of Tom now. So once again, we talk about Tom's plan blowing up in his face. And then now they're saying like, oh, yeah, there obviously was a plan to get rid of Shay. Why did Tom not stop that? Clearly, this means he's not working with us.
Yeah, well, look, it's like history repeating itself. Like, let's all put on our, little pointy rice hats and travel all the way down the Great Wall of China back to season 15, because this happened back then. This whole thing occurred, the whole Sudoku moment. We were reliving it. Mm-hmm. And that was the moment when They were throwing the challenge on the puzzle at the end. We've got Jack and Mike putting a tight ass together in the puzzle. Is that the first tight ass reference we've had in the history of Survivor? Because I'm not mad at it. I mean, it
depends on what people said about Frank Garrison during Survivor Africa, but I don't think he was ever called a tight ass. That was definitely, I think Jack has shown himself to be, I can understand if people think, you know, even though we talked about how these people are more normal and relatable than your usual Survivor characters, I could see arguments that Jack might be a little over the top, that, you know, it seems like he's someone who's constantly talking, and I can't be hypocritical and admonish him for that, considering how much of a chatterbox I am. But I mean, it shows how cheeky he is. Speaking of cheeky, in that he just decided to start spelling out tight ass like these were, you know, letter tiles on the fridge in the break room at work that he was playing around with,
leaving notes for his coworkers. But I was just getting mad flashbacks to PG and Jamie, you know, doing that puzzle. And the thing about that is that for my money is the only time when throwing a challenge really works, because you have a very definite numerical advantage and you're in a swap and you want to vote someone out to even up the numbers and protect the people on the other side. The problem that in China was the second challenge, they didn't throw that as well, and they kept James in the game because it seemed like they were the people on the other side were drifting away from them. Mm-hmm. Was it Shireya?
There was the challenge. I only remember this because I watched Survivor China like last year for Survivor Historians. But yeah, there was that challenge. The reward challenge took place in the ancient village.
That's right. And they had to run into the buildings.
Yeah. And PG was trying to talk to Shireya, and Shireya apparently was not giving her the time of day. She was just, you know, challenge blinders on. And so they thought, oh, maybe we shouldn't, you know, maybe we shouldn't throw the challenge and get rid of James because we don't know if Shireya is going to be on the other side. And then at the same time, you have the possibility of Fei Long thinking about throwing the challenge to protect James. Of course, Denise ends up taking it for them regardless with eating the balut. I guess that, you know, I don't know who that could have been in this scenario. Maybe if they ended up putting Shay on the puzzle, she could have been the Denise, and that even though they weren't throwing it, she would have tanked it for them anyway. But yeah, lots of similar comparisons there.
Very similar. I think what you mentioned before is that what happened when the Fei Long and the Zhang Hu tribes merged, we have this whole moment where they find out that they were throwing the challenge, and it really does kind of isolate PG and Jamie away from everyone. No one trusts them. Now that the word is out that they were throwing that challenge, like, it's very clear, maybe not to Shannon, which was so awkward because she was so celebratory. But the idea is out there that they were willing to throw the challenge, and is that going to impact them later on about how trustworthy they are?
I think it's a good point, especially because I would not say, I know people are saying that, like, oh yeah, this first season is all about honor and loyalty. I think that's the case within a few vocal people. Salah has gotten the lion's share of airtime. I think it's because he's a really entertaining persona, but he's also has been championing the New Zealand version of mateship in a way of like, hey, you know what? It's honor, it's loyalty. Tony, I know that you're going, but I promise I won't write your name down. It's sort of like, I think Shannon compares it to putting your heart above your head, which, you know, I think has its own merits in the game. It allows Salah to be extremely trustworthy. At the same time, if he does get to the end, we shall see if that's going to come back to bite him, much like another cricketer that you know very well. But it's interesting in that, I do think that some of these people do really take to heart something that can come across as deceptive. And I think amongst certain people, you know, Nate and Barb are just looking for a reason to hate those guys. I think this would be a key reason to do so. Salah is not going to be, it seemed like he had a pretty negative reaction to it. Again, it seems like Avi is enough of a good-hearted person, especially after seeing that they did it to get rid of one of his allies, that he would not be happy about it. Shannon might have interesting emotions because, like you said, she was so celebratory. I'm assuming that she would be happy that, you know, her alliance members were thinking about her. I'm sure we'll talk about whether or not she's willing to jump ship, though, considering the amount of talking that she did with her current tribe mates. But yes, but if this information gets out, and the problem is if they lie about it, I feel like that's almost worse, right? Because it's totally so obvious that they're going to be like, well, if you fessed up to it, that might help you a tiny bit, but now we're definitely not going to work with you.
Well, like, let's think about this quote that really triggered me from Shannon. And this is about this whole idea of we've got people who are willing to lie and kind of like play the game the way they need to. We've got the people who are like admonishing people for the way they behave. She says, people play with their heart. I'm not the kind of players who appreciate strategy or scrambling. People are playing with their heart and their soul. I need to show that I deserve to play this game, earn my right to play this game. And that just is so frustrating because I just get so triggered by that because it's just like you want to play a certain way and you feel like, you know, I've been waiting, you know, 15 years. And it's clear that Shannon's a fan. They've all mm-hmm. mentioned that she is someone who's seen a lot of Survivor. She's got a huge knowledge of the game. That you see the card tower starting to topple and you feel like you need to scramble. But the problem is that more scrambling just puts you in a worse position. And this is where the whole Nickish thing came from when, you know, trying to kind of oversell yourself and that you really are stuck in this kind of catch 22. But I think what makes Shannon a better Survivor player than myself is that she is reeling it back and letting it, mm-hmm. that she's playing the way that they want to play. Whereas I just kept kind of like bashing my head against the wall, hoping to knock it down, which is, word to the wise, it doesn't work. So if any of you are out there, do not bash your head against the wall. Just kind of like grab their hand and guide them around it. And I really just think that that's why Shannon is probably set up in a good position because she's adjusting to the context through which she's playing.
Yeah,
and that's something I struggled with.
And I think it's a good idea because, I mean, the thing about Survivor as well, the day one eliminations even establish this, is that in this pre-merge of Survivor, the peg that sticks up more than the other ones is going to be the first target for the hammer, in a way. Yeah. And I think Shannon did a great job of, as you said, almost assimilating with this group. Like, okay, this is what they value. Great. I'm going to sit around and giggle. I'm going to be chummy with them. She seemed to really make an effort to speak with Avi and Sala in particular, considering that she never met them. And as a result, you have Sala saying at the end of this episode, you know, I'm starting to really have some trust in Shannon. Now the question is, if Hermosa went to tribal council, would she be gone? Oh, absolutely. Which is another reason why Shannon's statement is really interesting, is that she says, you know, these people are playing with their hearts over their heads. But I don't know, because I sort of feel like they were pretty strategic in getting rid of Georgia. You know, it feels like there is some strategy there. And I think Nate and Barb have done a really interesting thing. And I think Chance has a big portion to play, as it does with any Survivor player. But they did an interesting job of being able to utilize their advantage in the numbers and in the swap to really, you know, make a strategic impact in the game and really fire across the bow of alliances. But Shannon's done a really nice job, and she's also benefited from working as a spy due to the fact that, as I talked about before, the older Hermosa never went to tribal council. She did not go to tribal council in this new Hermosa either. So she really has not had a time to really test her loyalties. That's one of the downsides, you know, when you have tribes like Tandang and Galoo fall apart at the merge, is because
Galoo-itis.
Yeah, exactly. Galoo-itis, like you talked about before. One of the advantages of going to tribal council, at least somewhat in the pre-merge, is that you sort of not only get to cut the chaff from the wheat stalk, if you will, but you also get to get a semblance as to how these other people function and where loyalties lie. Shannon went to tribal council on day one, and that's it. She has not yet had a chance to say, I'm with you, this is the way that I'm voting. And so she's in a really interesting position at the merge because she has basically sworn her loyalty. She's taken two dates to the same dance, but she hasn't had an opportunity to actually hit the dance floor and say, this is the person that I'm dancing with. So it could get her in a lot of trouble depending on who she picks, but she's in such a good position right now because she has no evidence to say, oh, I'm supporting this alliance or I'm supporting this alliance. She can jump any way she wants to.
Yeah. I like the dance analogy. Very slick. Very slick.
More slick than my dance moves.
Hey, not like Cochran. We hear he's a master on the dance floor. I'm very surprised by that. I like that. let's move to the immunity challenge. Sorry, the reward challenge. You mentioned it before. We have this whole thing about the hero challenge. What are your thoughts? Tell me.
So we've seen this before. Most recently in Survivor Cambodia, this was the Savage versus Jeremy versus Terry Dietz challenge at Sundown. Really interestingly shot challenge. And that came, I think the initial term hero challenge came from Survivor San Juan del Sur, actually. I believe that's the term that they gave for the reward challenges in that episode or that season, where it was, you know, one person from each tribe.
Yeah.
In the beginning stages, like one person against their loved one faces off. So, I mean, I think from a storytelling perspective, it's a very interesting idea, this idea that one person competes in the challenge. And it's not like we've haven't had these challenges to parry down the participants before. I mean, the second immunity challenge in Survivor New Zealand was, oh, we only have, you know, eight footholds in this immunity challenge. So, you know, four people must sit out. But I mean, from
our budget only stretches to three.
Exactly. Oh, we didn't have enough wood to build everything else. All right, let's just winnow it down a bit. But to have Avi not only participate, but also win, I feel like is a great culmination of his storyline. I think Avi alluded to this earlier on in the episode. He is a little bit of the Kiwi Charlie Brown in that, you know, I'm thinking about this hot pursuit challenge where he's like, I have this great strategy. Everybody drop your bags and give it to three people in the beginning, and ends up not working out so well. He was in the beginning sort of like the James Miller, sort of like the Malcolm of Matt Singh past.
Yeah.
This like very beleaguered male who tries to lead his tribe, but his schemes are a little harebrained. So here he's actually able to prove himself, and he's able to do so very well. And I was surprised initially. I think that on paper, these two tribes stacked up a little bit like you spoke about One World before, Nick, the post-swap tribes in One World, where we have, as Colton Cumby puts it, I think the Greek gods versus the peasants. I guess Hermosa was able to benefit in that they're able to put up their strongest guy against Mogaton's arguably the strongest guy. I know they played rock, paper, scissors to get Lee to do it.
They seemed so relieved when he got it as well.
Yeah, but I feel like, you know, Avi being able to win this is not only great momentum for Hermosa, but also a great win in Avi's book, and especially for his edit.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the Hero Challenge. I think the best part of Survivor is that you are out there and everyone, whether you like it or not, you have to get up and you have to compete, and it exposes weaknesses. It exposes random strengths. I'm not a fan of it. I understand why it works. It was interesting in American Survivor because, you know, it was like so odd to have something like that. In this one, it's, I don't know, we've had very scaled down challenges before, so it didn't stand out as much. But the most interesting thing to me, Mike, is that I did one of these pretty much like in the, the final reward challenge. It was Vival versus Sanapu. It was for the chocolate reward. And I was the person who had to run out. I had to undo the rope. I had to pull the boat back in. I had to grab the pieces. I had to come back and I had to make the puzzle. The other four people were just, you know, rowing the boat. So essentially it was pitched to us as a hero challenge. And it's really, really scary when you are put in that position.
Yeah.
I was the only one that could do the running and the puzzle. And, you know, whereas we had Lee, who could have, you know, very easily done the running and pulling of the boat, but he didn't, you know, didn't think he could do the puzzle. It puts a lot of pressure on there. And I have never pooed my pants more in my Survivor career than I did when I was, you know, when Jonathan was calling go on that challenge. Because if you win, it exposes you as a physical threat. And in my instance, it exposed me as a physical threat. You know, it reiterated that I was a puzzle threat. And if you lose, you're hated by the whole tribe. Like, it's just such a crummy position to be put in. I absolutely hated it.
Now, did you poo more at the start of that challenge or after you ate all that chocolate?
Actually, after the chocolate, it was coming out the other direction. So,
yeah, but Barb's talked about it being a natural laxative. And to be honest, that chocolate ended up looking like poop when it came back in a melted Ziploc bag.
Okay, this is what I want to talk about. That was the most hideous thing I have seen in a really long time. What were they thinking? Like, get a cooler, you know, get a cooler of ice, put the chocolate bars in there. It was the most... I just was rolling on the floor laughing to the point where I had to screenshot it. I put it on Twitter and I put the call out for like the worst rewards in Survivor history. And I reckon this is up there. Well, for your money, what else are the other worst rewards?
Okay. I mean, Survivor Pizza is always up there, especially I think the one that comes to mind is the Token Sheens version when they were doing Survivor Shuffleboard in the pouring rain and the pizza was soggy. One big one that I can think of, Survivor Exile Island, there was a 3-person reward to eat breakfast in bed. But once again, the rain came in the picture and the bed was soaked. It was drenched. And so they had to sit in this moist bed chomping on, you know, soggy bacon. It sounded horrible. But yeah, this was a pretty bad one as well. I know that they were able to make the most of it and be like, okay, let's just like lap up the liquidy diarrhea like chocolate that came out of this bag. A win's a win. But at the same time, that's gotta be so disheartening. I mean, how do you think Sam would have dealt with that? I mean, considering how much he loved his Tim Tams back during Australian Survivor, if it came back to him in a puddle, I'm assuming he'd be pretty disappointed.
Oh, I would have loved that. if I had a chance and if I knew that he was going to win, I would have been there with like a little hairdryer melting it so that he would win.
But you're just living up to your Nickish reputation, man. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
I just couldn't believe that they were melted, and I couldn't believe that it was in that gross plastic bag. It wasn't even on like a nice platter with like a flower or something. Like, where's the Jeff voice when he's like, you're going to get lotions, hamburgers, melted chocolate bar? Like, it was, Matt was just like, oh yeah, and in there there's some melted chocolate bars. Like,
no, I love the Matt saying, and Matt is such an odd Doug, and we, of course, we have the close but no Nicaragua part, but you know, I don't know if this is a term with you, Nick, you've been educating me so much, but he goes like, mimosa, enjoying an afternoon of relaxing, just kicking back, eating chalky. Is that a phrase? Is chalky a phrase?
Chalky is an Australian and a New Zealand thing. We love to truncate words. So breakfast is brekkie, you know, chocolate is chalky. Having it like a cigarette is a ciggy. It's just, that's what we do. We're so lazy.
So interesting. So wow. A ciggy. Didn't she play in a Survivor Millennials versus Gen X? can you imagine Jeff Probst being like, all right, a nice chalky is awaiting you. Like, and that voice, that lascivious voice you were talking about. It was such, I mean, I've learned so much. I learned how much gutted is a term in the vernacular of New Zealand after this episode. I'm learning so much and I'm so excited about it.
Cable Brandon sent us in something over on Twitter. He hit me up and he said, New Zealand drinking game, shot every time Georgia says gutted. Like, you would see.
Shay said gutted a lot too, though, in the second episode.
Oh, like, you'd be plastered. You'd be absolutely plastered. What I figured out is that the rewards, they're not for players. The rewards are for the audience back home. When I'm sitting on my couch, I want to sit there and I want to go, damn, those ice cold Cokes in the Amazon, those look great. Or, oh, look, I could go a bowl of coleslaw. Or, you know, do you know what? I'm going to go and get that Outback Steakhouse that Sandra's talking about. You know, or like even the Whoppers with us. Like, people on the couch want to be like salivating and feeling that kind of hunger when it's like, yeah, here's some pillows. And we ran around the camera crew and found some, you know, things from the vending machine that were like half in their pocket. Like, you can grab those as well if you want. Like, people on the couch are repulsed. Like,
what if they have a challenge? I know we had a couple challenges in Survivor history where they got to ransack the other tribe's camp. What if they have a challenge where you get to ransack the production members' pockets? Yeah. You get to pickpocket the camera crew and take whatever they have on them, money included. I also like, I know you said like they had the tarp and the mats. Again, I might have misheard this, but when they were rolling out the mats at Hermosa, did Nate say that, he's like, he rolls out the mat, he says, oh, that's going to feel like a walrus. Is that a phrase? What does that mean, Nate?
A speckled walrus, I think.
Exactly. The white walrus guy.
I must have missed that. I must have missed the speckled walrus. That's funny. A few other people hit me up on Twitter and said that the worst rewards we had. Nalia's mint.
I mean, that, to be fair, that was a mint. That was a reward that she provided. The yacht was pretty good because it was on Jeff Probst's credit card. She's the one that offered the additional reward of a mint.
True. The other thing, that the big one that came up, was the spit covered meat from Survivor South Pacific with a lot of little Hans germs all over them. Andy Torrens from my season sent in a lovely picture of slag covered meat, which I thought, you know what? I'd probably go the chocolate, to be honest.
I'd rather have a melted bar of chocolate than the oral herpes that Cochran talked about all over that meat. And because Brandon Hans touched it, there might be some other stuff on it as well.
But like, at least Sarah Krause on Twitter, she said, at least the spit-flavored meat was in a fancy basket. The Ziploc bag screams from stolen from a lunchbox. And I have to agree, like, put it on a platter, put one of those little lifted lids on it with a little flour next to it, just kind of up it a little. It was just, I couldn't believe it. I was absolutely floored by that.
Is that your submission for Close But No Nicaragua this week?
I got a few. Let's get to those.
I've got a couple as well.
Okay, go. Hit me up. What do you got?
All right, let's talk about tree mail. I mean, are we calling it tree mail or are we calling it two sentence, 12-point font Times New Roman word printout? Because
two sentences. One word was there for the immunity challenge. Puzzle spell.
Let's also realize that this is not called tree mail. It's called invites. They're sending out invitations as if this is a big grand event. Reward challenge invite, the burden of responsibility. And yes, I know that they don't show it anymore on Modern Survivor, but I love the chintziness of the tree mails. Silly rhymes. And you get weird moments, like fun moments, like in the first episode of Survivor All Stars, where Boston Rob's trying to read the tree mail and Sue's like, "What? Why'd you say?" And Boston Rob goes,
Unity!
Those fun moments, or you have Jan from Survivor Thailand not actually reading the tree mail and just blathering on about having $200 American. There's so many great moments to come with tree mail, but like you said, we have a Roar Challenge invite, the burden of responsibility, the second one, immunity challenge invite, and then it's just puzzle unscrambled. Like, the most bare basic things. Go through at least a little bit of effort, guys. Come up with some sort of, you know, lavish poetry. I mean, maybe they should hire you, Nick, freelance. I know since you came up with such great poems with the aforementioned neutral box moment, you'd be able to come up with some sort of rhyme in this moment.
I had a rhyme scheme. I had, you know, all my poetic techniques. I pulled them out of the bag and it was not appreciated. So if they came calling, I would send them right back to the intern that made the Microsoft Word parchment invites. And like, can you turn them down? This is what I want to know. It's an invitation. Are you allowed to turn it down?
Yeah, exactly. Can you say maybe attending?
Yeah.
Where Hermosa would have, if they could, they would have said not attending, and that would be the way they threw the challenge. Or Mogaton, that's what they would have said.
They should just send them, like, Facebook invites now. Like, there's people never check those. Like, I'm not going to go to that. Kurt Clark hit me up on Twitter. That was something really kind of, like, got onto him. He said that they should snag Arvi's pen, give it to an intern, put in a show of effort. In the words of Ryan Aitken, that's pretty cheap. And I have never agreed more with the great Kurt Clark.
One other thing, I mean, I forget if you guys have talked about the lapse of luxury that they have had in the past couple episodes. Was this the first time we saw the playing cards? I know you talked about a house of cards. We're going to see a house of cards in the Redemption Island duel next week. But I see Shay's playing solitaire, which actually is pretty apt because she was pretty solitary on that new Mugaton tribe. But I that's the first time that I remember seeing cards on Survivor in a very long time.
Yeah, it's like, I just think the idea of giving people stuff like that takes them out of the game. You're giving someone something to entertain them. Shay also has that giant Bible, which is like 2,000 pages. And you're essentially giving someone the ability and the green light to isolate themselves from the camera, from the storyline for hours at a time. And it's not the way to go. Interesting side note. Before we left for Australian Survivor, we had sentimental items. We weren't able to get luxury items, but we would have put it together, a sentimental item. Mine was just a photo of my family. And Flix was the book, The Secret. And
of course it was. I love Flick to death, but that is very Flick to have the book, The Secret.
I remember when she told me that, I was like, yes, we can rip it apart and use it as fire making stuff. And Matt had a pack of cards as a magician. He was going to, give us magic tricks and stuff. And the show said no. And in my head, I'm like, no, damn right, we shouldn't have this stuff. Like, this is a distraction from the game. Like, this is stuff that's going to kind of, like, I don't know. I don't like it. I like that the idea is that you huddle under that shelter in the freezing rain and you have to converse with each other. And giving someone cards or, like, backgammon or anything like that takes them away from it.
Well, it's interesting because I do feel like this is another respect where Survivor New Zealand feels like a very old school season, because these older seasons, they had raincoats. I remember Survivor Amazon, they prominently wore sunglasses like all the time. I feel like even if you don't have playing cards, they have a way to come up with things to do. I mean, Survivor Guatemala, Jamie was all about playing Mancala with Rafe. And I believe there actually might have been a couple times where they had painted playing cards as well. So that's the other thing. Why feel a need to provide the castaways with something? In a perfect world, they'd be ingenuitive, that they'd be able to make do with what they had, be their own Cat in a Hat during a rainy day at the beach, and they could come up with something fun to do. Instead, you're just sort of giving them an easy out. And as a result, who knows, maybe why Shay lost is because she spent too much time sleeping and playing with cards instead of, fraternizing with the guys.
You know, like, I remember one of the biggest shocks for me, you know, I was pretty tuned into what the Survivor production side of things was before I went out there, so there wasn't many surprises, but one of them was that I thought that there would be so much downtime. You hear about people on Survivor saying, you know, it's so boring, there's so much time to sit around, and maybe in an American season where there's, you know, one day off every 3 days, but we had one day off every four with three challenges in a row, and it just kind of, I never felt bored. I never, like, even if I had wanted to create some cards or a backgammon table, I never would have had the time to do that. And I think that's a sign of like a fast moving game, because there's always something to do to keep you busy, whether it's production induced or contestant induced. So not a fan of the cards, not a fan of the cards. What else you got for Close But No Cigar Agua?
I don't know if this counts, but have you noticed that they have a nickname for the immunity idol?
Yeah, what was it again?
I think it's Old Mate or it's Old Maid. Again, going back to the cards analogy.
Okay. This is the continuation of your Australian lingo education, Mike.
Oh, fantastic.
So in Australia, and I guess New Zealand as well, you can refer to anyone as Old Mate. So if I'm like hanging out at home and it's like, oh, go see what Old Mate wants. And it's like, if the dog's barking at the door, or, you know, go run down to the store and see Old Mate for some steaks, like the butcher. And it's very ambiguous and it can literally be anyone. But, yeah, that's old Mate. There
wow.
you go. Old Mate village people. There you go.
Retirement yes, village. Old Mate. Well, I mean, Old Mate did go back to the retirement village people. So I think it's hanging out with people in its proper age bracket.
So there you go. I feel like we're really teaching you lots of stuff today. This is great.
I mean, we didn't even talk in the beginning about how we're really breaking boundaries. I believe I am the first, not only non-Australian, but American, North American on the Survivor Know-It-Alls. It is an absolute pleasure. And I, on behalf of all Americans, I want to thank you and the New Zealand populace that are participating on Survivor New Zealand for teaching me so, so much about everything down under in terms of the vernacular.
Well, it's our absolute pleasure. You are the first, like you said, the first non-Australian to be here, and I don't think we could have picked a better person, Mike. So thank you so much for joining us and learning. You're a real old mate. I like it.
Oh, good. Now I know what that means.
I have one more Close But No Cigar Agua, if you shall indulge me.
Absolutely.
I don't know if you follow our friend Matt Chisholm, who is the host on Twitter, but...
I do not.
He's at Matt7Sharp. I don't know about what Jeff or Jonathan would ever do, but I would never see them going on and just roasting people on Twitter. Now, Matt Ooh. Is absolutely ruthless with anyone who critiques the show. So it's happened a couple of times and it's just so good. Someone tweeted him, Ezra, at Matt Sharp, you should be less worried about how the contestants get to Redemption Island than you should be about the Tribal Council snooze fest going on. Hashtag bored, hashtag ZZZ. And Matt returns, great burn, Ezra. I genuinely hope your one follower loved it.
Oh my God.
And then you go, and Ezra does indeed have one follower.
I think this needs to be a new segment on your show. Tweets, baby tweets, Chisholm tweets.
Okay.
And then it's just a string of expletives. I love this idea that the host is going after trolls, just personally, just like vilifying them. That is amazing.
He's just absolutely dragging people on Twitter. Like before the season started, someone said, he's posted a screenshot from a journalist online saying, before watching the first episode of the not at all anticipated Survivor NZ, I was willing to place a $100 bet with myself that I would actually hate this show more than I hate The Bachelor. And then Matt Chisholm replies, here's my opinion piece. Anyone who bets a hundy on hating a show before watching it probably shouldn't be writing about it.
I mean, he doesn't necessarily have a bad point. I think it is actually pretty irresponsible for the journalist to be like, oh yeah, I knew I wasn't gonna like this and I definitely did it, but at the same time, the host of the show usually is not the one to say those things.
He's got a point in all of these things, but like, should he be saying them? The final one, if you shall indulge me, the one
absolutely.
More someone says, comparing at Matt Sharp, I like at Jonathan LaPaglia more. And he says, hi, Tony. Without knowing either of you, comparing at Jonathan LaPaglia to you, I like him more than you. Good on you. Good on you, mate.
Oh my god, in true yeah, New Zealand fashion, he like ends up with like a sort of positive affirmation, like, oh yeah, no, it's okay that I just eviscerated you.
I just the Chisholm roast, getting chiseled. Let's just call it getting chiseled on Twitter. Yeah.
Could you imagine if like there's gonna be a point in the game where like instead of the burn book challenge, the touchy subject where the castaways answer questions about each other, Matt Chisholm just answers the questions about them himself. Like, who do I think deserves to not be in the game?
Shay, get on your bike and get the hell out of
here. Go back to your two Twitter followers.
I just a sick burn by the host is, and he's only got like 20 tweets, and most of them are just roasts.
You need to track this throughout the rest of the season because this is God. Incredible. We have very rarely seen a host go after the Twitter populace so fervently as Matt Chisholm has. He's definitely he's scarfing down some chalky, and then he's going after all the old mates on Twitter.
Oh, it's just great. So yeah, we'll definitely follow that. Don't you worry. There was something else I wanted to talk about, and that was Redemption Island. What are your thoughts on now? You know, Redemption Island, it's one of those things that people don't love it. And I came into it kind of like hopeful, thinking, do you know what? Maybe this is another interesting spin on it. Seeing it across two episodes, I must say I am enjoying the fact that there is that anticipation of someone coming back into the game. And maybe it's because I'm a real fan of Georgia. I think Georgia's great for TV. I think she's got a good vibe about her. But what are your thoughts on it? How do you feel about how it's going to impact the game going forward?
Yeah, so going back to this alliance chart, the de facto alliance chart that I made at the beginning of this podcast, where we have the retirement village people in Shay, Barb, and Nate, or Sala, Barb, and Nate. We have the four Kiwis in Lee, Mike, Jack, and a seemingly Tom, and then we have Avi and Shannon in the middle, ready to swing to either side. I think that, like I said before, whoever returns is going to be solidly in one of those first two camps. If Georgia comes back, she's going to be under Mike's wing again. She's going to be part of that initial group. And I'm personally, as much as I might bemoan the idea of Redemption Island, I feel like it's going to be a win-win no matter what, because I do feel like Georgia and Shay are both captivating people in their own right. And I feel like they both actually have a pretty good head for the game as well. You know, Shay was making some really, let's say, interesting decisions in the first part of Mogaton. Even with the Izzy boot by voting for Lou instead of Izzy shows how particular she can be sometimes. But I feel like she's an interesting person to watch play in that regard. And I feel like Georgia definitely has a head about herself. As screwed as she was on the New Hermosa, she tried her best to get in their good graces and ended up being unsuccessful. But, if she comes back, yes, she'll be sort of in that encampment of who's built up to be the villains at this point. But I feel like there's enough of a seed dropped. It was dropped at the end of this episode about Georgia and Mike sort of being this quote unquote power couple that it might sow some seeds of distrust in someone like Jack, who now has a number two and might be more liable to jump ship. Shay, I feel like if she comes back, she's going to solidly be with Sala. And that might be another reason for Avi to stick with the retirement village people as well, because again, let's remember the big alliance, even though Tony got sort of excised from it, was Avi, Sala, Shay, and Lou before she got evacuated. And so if the remaining two people of the trio are on one side, you want to drift towards that side. So it depends as well.
Who do you think will come back? Like, in saying that,
it's such a crapshoot because this is the House of Cards challenge. Let's remember that such big challenge beasts as Susie Smith of Survivor Gabon and Jerry Manthe in Survivor Heroes versus Villains won it. So I don't think physicality really plays a part. I mean, what I will say about the Redemption Island duels are that, with the exception of maybe, I think it was Izzy versus Tony, the throw yourself around a rope challenge, they've all been pretty fair in that I don't think they favor any sort of form of physicality. Yeah. I mean, they even talked in this episode's or this week's duel about the fact that when it came to the China stacking challenge, Izzy should have an advantage because since she's taller, her arms are able to be closer to her center of gravity, closer to her chest, whereas Georgia had to stretch out more. Georgia was able to defy expectations there. So I feel like maybe Shay has it in her. I mean, she has the height advantage, So maybe she'd be able to like reach up with those last couple pieces. That might be a complete guess on my part. But,
yeah,
you know, I feel like it would be interesting as well, going back to, you know, Abby has a is going to hop over with Nate, Barb and Sala. If Shay's back, if Georgia's back, I feel like Shannon's more liable to hop over with the guys, because Shannon talks this entire episode. And granted, she might have been talking about out of her butt, but she's telling them, you know, oh, I wasn't really close with Mike. I was more close with Georgia. And now she's gone. If that's true, if her number one is back in the game, that's going to give her more of a reason to flip. So again, these two people in the middle are entirely contingent on who comes back from redemption, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm really interested. I'm hoping it's Georgia, but I think that I think, like you said, it could be anyone. The challenges, the last two challenges, so the stacking China and then the card tower. That's something that I always wanted to do. I love the stacking China challenge. I don't know if it works when they're these big, cumbersome, like terracotta pots, but I really like that challenge choice. And the House of Cards one, I think, always is interesting when you see people stack completely smash, and it could be anyone. So I don't know. Well, I think we'll see. What are your thoughts on this whole thing about, should I cheer for Georgia? Should I cheer for Shayna? Like, how do you feel about that? Because I think there's a pretty clear answer.
Yeah, I mean, this is also like a little bit, I feel like Survivor, while it is sort of a microcosm and individual society forms within the group, I feel like there are certain tendencies that are almost juvenile and high school in nature that come out sometimes. And that definitely feels like one of like, oh, you know, I'm in the cool group, but my friend's a nerd. And like, do I cheer for them at the talent show, or do I point and mock at them? And that's where Shannon sort of floats the idea at the duel of like, oh, can I root for Georgia and Izzy? I also don't understand the choice to bring both tribes in total to the duel, especially because they're going to do it next time and there actually is going to be a merge. I don't know if they were trying to build up false expectations of a merge.
Probably,
for some reason.
Yeah.
But yeah, it definitely seems like, I mean, Survivor's a game where people can pick out the most minute behavioral tendencies of people and find a reason to target them based on that. You are the prime example of someone who fell victim to that, unfortunately. And so I feel like Shannon's really trying to tread lightly with that. At the same time, it sort of is, we were just talking about Tom at the beginning of this podcast with like, oh, I'm happy Abby won today, and that it might be a little too cute in trying to really play to both sides.
But at the answer is don't cheer for anyone. Like, that's to me, I think that's the clearest answer. What do you need to cheer for someone for? You're going to piss off one person, you're going to piss off the other. If you're sitting there cheering for Georgia and then Izzy wins, you screwed yourself, because, you know, just sit there and be an impartial observer and then give them the winner a rounding applause and a wink as they walk off, whoever it is. I just like it. There's too much cross-pollination of these people in this season who are wanting to kind of like, they're talking to each other, they're giving away information. And we Flick and I covered this, was it last week or maybe it was with Craig the week before, about at the challenges, they're standing there and they're sharing all this information. And, you know, before the tribe swap even happened, they were sharing that they were going to vote someone off. Like, keep it tight for the people that you're with. You don't have to make a big song and dance out of it. And maybe that will kind of curry you a little bit more favor than like isolating someone by like letting information leak about who you're with.
Yeah. And I think it was you and Flick talking about it last week, because I believe last week was the Lax Bro challenge that ironically the Bro Tribe lost, with the where Nate told Sala like, hey, I'm on the bottom, this is everything that's going on at my tribe. That's a little bit of a different case. That's, you know, that's almost comparable to Billy Garcia turning to the Railroad Tribe in Survivor Cook Island and saying like, well, I'm going home. I think the jury's still on as to whether Nate fell in love with Sala in that moment. Did it end up on the same tribe together?
Yeah.
I don't know what they're shipping name Nala, maybe, or Sate. I think that's still yet to come. But yeah, I could see the situation where, I mean, information is really currency.
But in that instance, it was Sala. It was Sala that was doing the problem. You're completely right that, like, you know, that's what Nate should have been doing. He had nothing to lose, but Sala was giving him the information back.
Yeah. Like, I think in a game like Survivor, the only currency you have is information. That's the only bargaining chip that you're using. If you're essentially throwing your money in the middle of the street, people are going to, don't be surprised if people come running and grabbing it and not necessarily paying you a dime when you need money at the end of the day.
Yep. No, I think that you don't need to cheer for anyone. Just save that. Save it. All right, Mike, how do you feel about answering a couple of questions from the awesome listeners of the Survivor Noldos?
Let's get to it.
Okay. Clayton Odell asks, had Hermosa lost, would Shannon have gone? And this was your, you said earlier on, like, definitely. But let's tease this out a little bit. Is there any chance, that Nate and Barb are throwing all their lot in with Sala and Avi and not anticipating that perhaps Sala and Avi were going to join with Shannon? Now, whether it would happen or not, but is that something that you need to think about? Like, it was very clear that he was kind of like showing, Nate was telling Shannon that she was on the bottom. Is that something that you should be doing? He's just been talking about how, you know, by isolating him and Barb and putting them on the bottom, that was a dangerous move. But isn't he kind of doing the same thing?
I don't know, because again, it goes back to my sort of take on Avi and Sala, which is they're not going to cross you unless you cross them. And I feel like unless Shannon caught Nate and Barb saying something that would be defamatory to Avi and Sala, I feel like Avi and Sala would not be liable to say like, nope, we're going to flip back, unless Shannon somehow makes a promise, you know, hey, when we get to the merge, you can join up with the guys and we can vote everyone else out. I mean, she could also make a pitch of like, hey, if we have another challenge, we could lose someone like Barb, who has not necessarily been the strongest link. I'm not entirely sure. I just don't see a time where Sala and Abby would flip on the people that they just became so close to. And let's remember again, as much leeway as Shannon made socially, she only came in 2 days beforehand. Yeah. Yeah. Whereas Sala and Avi had an entire 4-day experience prior, almost essentially a week, to bond with these other two. I'd sort of tangentializing off of that, what did you think about this whole storyline of the Shannon Nate conversation, where yes, it was a little derivative of having Shannon basically go up to each and every person on Hermosa, yeah, talking about her loyalty to them, but it seemed like she was actively avoiding Nate because Nate freaks her out. And it's fun to sort of, you know, as much as we've seen Nate sort of be a bottom feeder in the first few weeks, it's sort of fun to see Nate with power, because yeah, this is where he goes into like super hard cop mode and just interrogates the heck out of Shannon.
And he's like tossing the stone up in his hand, like at any minute he's gonna like beat her with it. Like, he was,
yeah,
just
it's like,
it's like
in a Survivor Micronesia when Amy Cusack is talking to Eric Reichenbach right before the merge. She's like, she's holding that machete and she's just like swinging around like, oh, thank you so much for tossing my name out to Ozzy and Amanda.
Survivor threaders versus thugs versus, I don't know, something else. All right, we've got another question here, and this is a question from David Balthazar. He said, is Jack the New Zealand John Fincher, a poser? He seems like a tryhard whenever he's on camera. What are your thoughts?
I mean, humor is always subjective, so I feel like it's always hard to give an objective statement about the fact that someone is a tryhard. What I will say is that it goes back to sort of what Barb was saying in the early stages of the game, is that he really does not seem to have a filter. I feel like there's that one scene before they go to tribal council where he's like just banging stuff against a tree, being like, all right, we're leaving now, everybody get out, we're leaving. And I don't know if he's supposed to be Ross during that one episode of Friends where, yeah, nobody's ready and it, like, they've been beleaguering him, or if he just is someone who, especially when your mind kind of turns to paste at a certain day in Survivor, where he's just sort of is babbling at the mouth. I like it for what it's worth. I like the really kooky storyline of him trying to hunt after a pelican with a slingshot the week prior. I think, yeah, he's a fun source of comic relief, personally.
I'm all but about again, Jack.
Yeah, but again, I could see where people are coming from, where it doesn't exactly, it works and sort of grinds against them. But as someone who's looking for some levity in Survivor, I think he's providing some fun moments.
Totally. I'm all about Jack. Love it. Loving what he's bringing. I do understand the idea that it can kind of grind on you. I remember out there we had Matt, who was in Survivor AU. Matt was making jokes all the time. And I really appreciate it, because like, I think he's awesome. But there was a point where it did start to get on people's nerves. And then you question like, is this for the cameras? But then you realize, oh no, this is just actually like who he is. So I'm enjoying it, just like I enjoyed watching Matt on TV and living with him. I'm enjoying Jack. So no, not a poser, not a John Fincher, and I think that it's in Jack's wildest dream that he's going to get with Parvati. So no. Nathan Bayless, Mike, I have to ask you, AU accents or NZ accents, which one?
Oh, I mean, I think I would get detention from my teacher here if I didn't say AU accents.
You might get a detention from Tom, though.
That's true. The thing that I guess it's a real Rafe's choice there. The thing that I've been noticing that's the difference between Australian and New Zealand accents, and you and Flick alluded to this last week, is that I feel like, and this is me going back to like my rudimentary voice and speech lessons from acting class in college, but I feel like the New Zealand accents are more like closed and played to the front. You and Flick talked about the whole mental aspect of it, whereas I feel like Australians don't say that. I feel like you guys are more like open and wide in the way you say things, whereas Australians, you can almost like purse your lips and pretend you're like talking through a straw, and that's the way the sound's coming out of your mouth.
Elocution lessons with Mike Bloom.
Though I will say, Tony, but between the two seasons that I've watched so far of International Survivor, Tony has been by far the most indecipherable person.
Yeah, we needed subtitles on him. He wasn't great. But do you have a New Zealand or an Australian accent that you would like to regale us with?
Okay, how about this? Okay. Let's continue our conversation. You try an American accent and I'll try an Australian accent. Tit for tat.
You know, when I did this, Stephen asked me on the know-it-alls for the Survivor finale. He asked me to do an American accent, and apparently I'm very California surfer dude when I give my accent. So I'm happy to give it a go. Let's do the next question completely in accent. Okay, Nathan Bayless also. Nathan Bayless also wants to know, if you two were to become a rap duo, what would your name be?
Right, rap is a very interesting type of music. I think that obviously I have some experience with it prior, being under the names of Mixmaster Mike Bloomizzle. That being said, I think I might be a modicum better than both Tom and Jack. I know, obviously, again, he cannot stop talking. He cannot stop producing beats as well. Can we come up with a name, Nikki? I feel like Nikki and Flicky was already taken, but we could go with a Nikki and Mickey, perhaps. I'm not entirely sure about that one.
Dude, I like Nikki and Mickey, but I think I'm going to go with Speckled Walrus. I think that
Speckled
really...
Walrus, that's a good one.
I think
Absolutely.
That really captures our folk image.
Absolutely, because when you lie on us, it's like sleeping on a walrus. Absolutely, like it a lot. It's good on you, good on you. Old mate.
Well done. Very good. If I had a bell,
kudos
I'd ding
to
you
both of us. To both of us. So that was fantastic.
Very good. Well, I've got one more question for you, and it's a very personal one. Considering your name is Mike, Nathan also wants you to power rank the Survivor Mike. So we've got Mike Sparrow, who's on Survivor New Zealand. We've got Mike Snow, Mike Scoopin. We might just remove that one from the list. Mikey B and Mike Barassi. What do you got? Who's your favorite? Who's someone who you'd be happy not to see again on Survivor? What do you got for
first,
me?
First, I'm surprised because Nathan also neglects to mention a couple of other Michaels that were on the show. We have, I believe, Michael Jefferson from Survivor One World, and I guess more notably of Naked and Afraid. We have
We forget the effervescent Mike Jefferson?
We have Michael Frosty Zernow from the aforementioned Survivor China, if that counts. And we also have a winner, Mike Holloway.
Oh, we forgot Mike Holloway. Nathan, come on, mate. You're falling behind here. What do you got?
Definitely not doing the happy dance in that regard.
Who's your favorite? Who's in the power rankings? Ooh, who have you got?
I mean, it's tough because... I'm between two because when I was on the Bachelorette podcast, when I was doing my like blind going in draft with Amy and Haley a couple weeks ago, I threw out this theory that I don't think there are many good mics in reality TV out there. For some reason, I don't know what it is, they just keep casting these bad scene mics. The one exception I will say is Michael Snow. I think he is just a heap of fun, and he is at all sorts of functions as well. I loved him at the live know-it-alls. I think it was after Survivor Cambodia when he was up there with Francesca, and Francesca forgot that he was on her season.
That was
that was incredible. So I'd put Snowy up there, but I feel like I also want to acknowledge Mike Holloway as well because he is the only Mike that has won. So you know, but as someone who values character above strategy with my Survivor players, I'm gonna put Snowy one, but I'll put Mike Holloway at like a 1A. This is the only challenge he could not win.
Very good. I'd have to agree with you there. I really would. As much as I loved me some mean motor scooter, it's got to be Mike Snow. So I think we're on the same page there.
Absolutely. And that seems like- I think there's one that will definitely hit the bottom of the list.
We don't need to mention it without any mention. But look, we were on the same page for that. We were on the same page for a lot of the stuff for this podcast. Mike Bloom, thank you so much for coming. And first of all, you know, a lot of people don't know, you were a last minute fill-in. I've been wanting to get you on, but I needed to kind of bump you in a little bit sooner because someone pulled out on me from my season. Will not be named, but you're the Sierra Dawn Thomas to our Natalie Anderson, filling in at the last minute for Game Changers. So how do you feel? You've been compared to the great fan favorite.
Well, I mean, this is why I got the gel manicure done. So, you know, this will last me a good like 2 weeks, but it was totally worth it. Before we finish things up, though, Nick, I feel like we need to bring something up that is entirely pertinent to you and international Survivor coverage. I do believe a certain promo dropped today, at least today from my times. I don't know. It was yesterday at the time you're recording this, but a certain like what minute 30 seconds happened upon Australian TV that's hinting towards something coming up later this summer.
Definitely. We got the promo for the second season of Australian Survivor. The first footage came out and it's made waves. It's made waves online here in the Australian Survivor groups amongst the contestants. It's definitely interesting because it's come out a lot sooner than it did last year. So this time last year, we were only at day like 10 of the game and the promos didn't come out for, you know, another couple of weeks, the initial promo. We've already got some footage of people's faces, albeit kind of like, you know, an eyeball or a chin. But already there's, you know, the internet has already gone out and started sleuthing and identified one of the people as someone who's been on another reality TV show here in Australia. I think one of the girls was in Face Off, which is the makeup show, I think.
Mm-hmm. We have a version here in the United States as well. But we're also burying the lead because I do believe the promo that does not feature close up of people's faces does have a cameo by one Mr. Nick Iadanza in the, you know, they have the whole montage being like, you don't have to be the strongest, and it cuts to Sam. You don't have to be the smartest, and it cuts to you sort of like looking snakishly on. And then it builds to this, and then it's basically, you know, the what they were marketing it as is like Australian Survivor season 3 was all about Christy, and now we got new people.
Remember when Christy did that crazy thing? You too can do this crazy thing, and you don't have to be smart, strong, or liked to win. That's pretty much what they're saying.
A little bit of like a little shade thrown at Christy, but then again, I don't disagree with them. I am never one to winner bash. I feel like people who make it to the end and win the jury votes totally deserve it, but I think it does prove that like you don't need to necessarily have won the most challenges or be the one in charge of the most votes. If you make your way to the end some way somehow and you get the majority of the jury votes, that's how you end up winning Survivor. So I really, you know, I have been one who was in support of Christy's win, specifically her final tribal council performance. That was an amazing finale all around. So
yeah, it really was.
I do really enjoy the fact that the show is also sort of buying into its own legacy by hyping that up. You would wonder if in an alternate universe, the show would say, oh yeah, like here are some big moments that happened during the season, but wouldn't necessarily highlight the winner, and instead would say, okay, now we move on to the next season.
Yeah, I think it's great. And it kind of fits in with this whole idea of, you know, my thought process of voting for Christy was that Christy leaves a better legacy for the show than Lee winning. So Lee winning is the, you know, if Kelly Wigglesworth won season one of American Survivor, in that, you know, what he represented and the way that he played is not kind of what a lot of the fans and myself valued when I was out there playing and also viewing. And Christy does fit into this idea that, you know, anyone can win, and you can win in a variety of different ways, and that be it strategic, be it, you know, whatever. And I think that does leave a better legacy, and they're definitely capitalizing on that in the promos. I think one of the key things that we could probably glean from the advertisement is that I'm going to plant the flag. I think season 2 of Australian Survivor is brains, brawn, and beauty. I have no inside knowledge, but I think that's the direction that we're going. We've got, you know, this promo of them saying you don't have to be the strongest, the smartest, and then, you know, you can't say the prettiest. So
or the most beautiful. That would be real shade thrown at Christy.
Yeah, you can't say that. So I think they end by saying, you know, the most popular, which is, you know, always that really weird, like nebulous idea of what makes a beauty tribe member. And I can just see them going for some sort of theme like that. My initial thoughts were that maybe they would kind of wait for a second season to establish the format before they would tinker with it. But I don't know. I reckon they're going to swing for the fences and go for the ratings grab with that interesting theme of brains, brawn, beauty. So we'll see. We shall see.
Yeah, I know the other thing that we did see, I think we saw two buffs, and it seems like they're going with the Survivor Cambodia color scheme of the pink and the teal, which as like a big Survivor nerd as myself, I am happy that as much as I loved your season, I think the red, blue, yellow starting tribes can be a little derivative sometimes, especially since we get it multiple times. So if we go with another color scheme, that's a lot of fun. It would be a really crazy way, like you said, they might be putting the cart before the horse in a way by saying second season, we already have a theme. But what I always say about these Survivor seasons, especially ones that come with a theme, is, you know, the theme is the theme. As long as I have a good cast, that's all that matters to me. And that's what made me fall in love with your season. And it's what's making me, you know, really start to enjoy Survivor New Zealand, sort of segueing it back to that. I do feel like things have been slow. Things have been a little derivative. But I feel like one of the benefits is that we really have gotten to know these people, like you said, so that, you know, once we get to the merge, we sort of know not only what are the, where these people are, but who they are. I think the only person that we really, I don't really have a good glimpse on is Lee. And maybe it's just because Lee is not providing much confessional wise, despite being called the Tarzan of Survivor New Zealand, which I think Tarzan and Troyzan from Survivor One World would have exception to that. But I'm hopeful, you know, I think that they really knocked it out of the park with Australian Survivor casting. It will be interesting to say you were talking about the legacy of Australian Survivor. I think there's been a lot of speculation with both Christie's win and sort of, I think, the fan pushback with the whole mateship concept.
Yeah.
If they're going to cast more quote unquote gamers or people that are willing to put these feelings aside, as Shannon said, to put the head above the heart and play the game a little more vociferously, and whether or not that will translate into, especially in terms of the post-merge, definitely a more eventful and very exciting game.
Yeah, look, all the reports that are coming out are saying that, you know, this cast is, you know, very, very cutthroat. They're like, definitely they went for big game players. And I think that was a definite pushback against, you know, what a lot of the fans felt about, you know, your Sams, your Lees, your Kates and stuff. I do think you need those players. Definitely. I think a play, you know, a season with all just kind of like, which is like an absolute bloodbath is, you know, it has its pros, it has its cons. But I definitely, all the reports I'm hearing is that this season, the contestants are insanely competitive. They all know the game. Yeah. And even if they don't know the American game, they watch what happened in our season and they've got a blueprint now. So no one should be going into the season blind. And that's what we like. So I'm super confident. It won't be long until we start getting, you know, more teasers and things. I know they're definitely still out there playing. My calculations would say that they're at like day 30 or something like that. So, you know, right around the corner from Emerge. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. there's definitely plenty of Survivor coverage coming on Survivor Know It Does. So stay tuned.
The question is, if people start saying, you know, hey, Matt Chisholm, you know, I'm more excited for Survivor Australia than I am this season. Do you think he's going to get angrier and angrier at the Twitter populace as more promos get released?
He is going to be chiseling hard. So I would stay away from him, but everyone should go out and follow Matt Chisholm. He is, it's an absolute corker on social media. That brings us to our social media component. What is the hashtag, Mike Bloom? What have you got for us?
I think we've got the Chisholm Berm, as we were mentioning before, and we've got Speckled Walrus. I feel like it's got to be one of the two there.
Our new rap name, Speckled Walrus. I like it.
Yes, where you're the American and I'm the Australian.
Two worlds collide in the new album, Speckled Walrus. Getting what could we get Matt Chisholm on as a musical feature featuring Little Chiz or something like that?
Little Chiz, he just yells at people in an interlude. It's just him reading angry tweets in the middle of the song.
Set to music?
Yeah, I like that.
Oh, great. All right, well, Mike, thank you so much for coming in. Where can people hit you up on social media?
So you can find me at a Mike Bloom type. I do a bunch of podcasting out in the podcast sphere. I talk a lot of Survivor. Obviously, I do the Survivor Historians podcast. I'm going to be talking some Survivor with Rob Cesternino soon enough as well. I will let the mystery be on that. Ooh. I also do some scripted TV podcasts. I'm covering the final season of The Leftovers and the third season of Fargo over on Jay and Jack. I also do coverage of RuPaul's Drag Race and Top Chef on reality TV wrap-ups. And this was just officially announced, so I'm very happy to say it's a few months ahead, but I will be officially joining the Survivor press beat. I will be doing exit interviews on behalf of Parade Magazine for Survivor 35, another three tribe format. So I am
congratulations, Mark.
Thank you. I mean, it's nothing compared to a bag of melted chocolate, but you know what? I will take it. I'm extremely nervous. I am extremely honored. I'm Josh Wiggler is leaving very, very large shoes to fill. I'm hoping I can, but I'm so excited to be able to talk some more and, you know, get to talk more and get closer in on this game that I love so much 35 seasons in.
Look, if anyone can fill in those shoes, it's you. You are the hardest working person in reality TV, and you definitely have a lot of shows under your belt. Just with The Leftovers, I got to say, it's such a good show. I'm like four episodes into the last season, and I cannot wait to see what happens. So once I've caught up on
Spoiler alert for Leftovers for the next like 30 seconds, tune out if you don't want to hear about this. How are you feeling that they've gone to your homeland for the last season?
Yeah, I feel like the whole time I was watching Leftovers, the first few seasons, I just felt like the incredible like correlation between this and Lost. And we know that Lost had this whole undertone of, you know, Australia and the Australian backdrop, as you know, that's where Kate fled and that's where the flight took off from. And I feel like it's just kind of fulfilling this Lostian prophecy by kind of like circling back to Australia. And I love it. I think it's great.
Yeah, I think that, and it also provides some mythical elements. I think the third episode in particular, again, I won't go into too many spoilers, but I think the third episode really connects to that. But that, I mean, that's fun. I mean, to have an international show suddenly move completely into your own backyard has to be really, really fun.
Yeah, definitely. I'm loving The Leftovers. Absolutely loving it. Mike, can you just really briefly explain what is the origin of your Twitter handle, A Mike Loom Type? Like, where did that come from?
It's silly. I was looking for something, and you know, I used to be an actor, and sometimes when you read like casting breakdowns, you'll see things like, you know, one thing that I used to read a lot about, because I was going obviously for a lot of nerdy Tom-esque parts, if you will. I was looking at, you know, like, oh, you know, skinny looking awkward nerd, a Michael Cera type, or so that's sort of what I was alluding to. I'm frightened if there is a casting notice that has a Mike Bloom type in there. I don't exactly know what project they're going for, but good luck to those auditioning. But yeah, it's my attempt at being Jack-like and cheeky.
It would be the telly series version charting the rise and fall of Speckled Walrus. I think that's
yes.
All right, Mike, thank you so much, and you can hit me up on Twitter at Nick Idanza or on Instagram, and let us know what you think using the hashtag Speckled Walrus. Thank you, everyone. We'll be back next week for week 5 of Survivor New Zealand. Thank you and goodbye.